X gon' give it to you. Wait for you to get it on your own. X gon' deliver to you. Knock, knock, open up the door, it's real. With the non-stop pop out from stainless steel. Go hard getting busy.
Welcome back, everybody, to the MLL Inside the Cross podcast. I am Kyle Devitt. I'm your host. I'm the gear and lifestyle editor for Inside the Cross. And today I'm joined by
Chris Rosenthal, Inside the Cross freelance contributor and MLL analyst.
Ooh, and we got a show for you guys today. We are taping this on the day of the MLL trade deadline for 2017. We will get to those trades, but as always, we do our weekend update, starting first with last Thursday's game, Ohio 16, Boston 15 in overtime. A lot of Canons fans are a little dumbfounded by a two-pointer by Max Seabold being disallowed. Chris, why was it disallowed?
Disallowed because there was a gentleman in the crease who had nothing to do with the play itself, but you can't be in the crease. I think it was Kyler Balestri, if I'm not mistaken. And the question would be how he got in there. He probably had some help getting into the crease that might have ruled it a push. But they saw him being in the crease, so they said no two-pointer.
And, you know, important context for that two-pointer we're talking about, the game was tied at 15. It would have put Boston up by two. And shortly thereafter, and as a result of that play, Ohio went man down because of a push on Balestri that was called in the game as interference, which it wasn't. It's the wrong call. But that being said, on the ensuing play, Ohio got possession and tried to pass out of it, and Balestri picked off the pass, but as the ball was kind of leaving the stick of the Ohio defender, they called timeout. So another controversial moment. Boston's bench went crazy. I thought someone was going to get like murdered on that sideline. But speaking of which, and speaking of murder, and speaking of shade, how much shade are the Ohio Machine throwing on Steele Stamick by giving Connor Panizzaro his jersey number? And why would you do that? Is that not confusing? Don't you have a bunch of Steele Stamick t-shirt jerseys to sell still?
First of all, they're throwing all of the shade by giving him that number. And, you know, if they do have some Stanwyck merch left, maybe they're just hoping that, you know, you can do the old, like, duct tape over the name on the back or something like that. You know, shirt jerseys aren't cheap. Just, you know, add, put some tape on it and then draw Canizzaro on the back of that. You're good to go. You know, I mean, that's if you're selling it like that, I can see where they're going from, you know, dollars and cents kind of standpoint. But, yeah, giving him the number six, I want to know, like, if he asked for the six or if they were like, hey, you know, you should wear this if you're going to play attack for us.
I would hope that he asked for it, but if it's the latter, then that's hilarious. He had a great game here, by the way, 3-2, 5 points. Great game for his first game of the week that the Ohio played. Back to the other side of the field. Very important question. Boston Cannons, bottom of the league. Are they done? At 3-6, are they done?
I'm going to say like a 95% yes, they're done. And so just based on last year's all finishes, basically they have to win out, and that's just to make it interesting, you know? And so, I mean, they still have Rochester, New York, Charlotte, and those are on the road. And then they come back and play Florida and Atlanta. So, I mean, especially the way the league's going this season, how many of those games are you picking them to win outright, you know?
Two? Maybe? I don't think they're winning all five, no matter what. And that's a double. They're definitely not winning all five, no matter what, once we get to our section on the trades. That's coming up. We're going to go to the second game, Denver 17, New York 14. Denver pulls a Denver and comes back from being down 9-2 to win this game. My question for you is, who are we pointing the finger at on New York? Who's to blame here?
Oh, it's interesting. When you said who we're pointing the finger at, I thought you were meaning like, do you give Denver the praise or New York the blame?
Oh, I'm blaming New York. I'm blaming New York. because because the way that Denver came back was a malpractice of many different varieties. And I just want to know which one you're going to go with.
All right, well, I'm going to go first and foremost. I mean, so I'm watching the game, and there were some turnovers that were unforced and definitely regrettable by the Lizards. It seems to be like some breakdowns with the midfield communication as far as defensively goes.
Yeah.
So, like, I would start there. You know, there's one play early on in the game where essentially you had like a two-man pick-and-roll sort of situation, and both guys went to the same one and left Westberg wide open for just kind of catching and shooting. That sort of thing. It feels like everybody isn't on the same page starting up top. So that's where I'm assigning the blame right away.
Yeah, I feel like you got to look at the offense, man, because the offense, this New York offense has Rob Pinnell, who made his comeback and played well. Second game of the comeback, 3-3. Good job. I mean, you know, it definitely maybe his best game all year. If you're just talking about stats, you've got Paul Rabel in this line. You've got Joe Walters. They traded for Jojo Marasco to bring in. Dave Lawson was in this game for them. I mean, Matt Gibson. If you have all those players and you can't score in any league, you are in trouble. Because there are coaches out there that would probably like sacrifice to the old gods to get those players to coach. And you have them and they can't score. And that's, you know, that maybe it's a way to blame someone for not putting the right combinations out or guys not going to the right spots when they're told to. I don't know. But I'm going to put it on the offense because the offense has to score. And yes, the defense didn't play well. I thought, you know, my second question here is, why would you ever short stick Jeremy Sievert ever on that Denver midfield? Because he's clearly the best dodger. Like Drew Snyder dodges to get his foot plant to shoot. Sievert's just runs through the dodge. You know, Westberg is great with a head of steam, but Sievert's is the guy you want to stop. I don't know why you would ever not put a pole on him. And he, you know, led that comeback with two big goals for Denver. So you can blame the defense a little bit, but the offense has to score, and there's just no excuse for me.
I can devil's advocate for the Sievert's move.
Sure, go for it.
He has been icy as of late. And so what I think happened, so he had, like, heading into this game, yeah, he was a monster in this game, but prior, he had two goals in the past four games.
Yeah.
And, you know, he was shooting like 180 or something like that. So I think what they did is I think they probably were of the mindset that they were just going to have to pick their poison. And Snyder had been coming in really high. He's been producing very well lately. And then you have these other guys like Currier and Berg who've just been destroying their short sticks. So when I was watching the game, I was thinking the same thing. And I thought maybe that's why. It's kind of like the old Chris Rock thing. It's like, I'm not saying I would have done it, but I understand. And, I mean, it didn't work out either way. But
I mean, they didn't make an adjustment either. That's the thing. Like, this is like the year of not making adjustments in the league. In-game adjustments are going to win you games, especially when, you know, we're looking at all these games here. The biggest deficit was four goals in a game. And a lot of the games were 2-3-1 goal. We got two OT games to talk about. But we're going to move on to Ohio 15, Chesapeake 13, Ohio's second game of the week. Ended with Chesapeake basically just turning into a Dutch bakery that manufactures turnovers, and the Ohio machine basically just being playing smarter lacrosse and out-hustling them even through the last part of the shot clock, which included the moonshot from Holman, who rocketed the ball into the air. And that ball was up there for like 6, 7, 8 seconds. I need you to rate that moonshot from 1 to 10.
I'm going to give the Holman moonshot a 9.4. he would have picked up the remaining 0.6 if the clock had run out completely. But the best part about it was the fact that when it was coming down, nobody knew where it was anymore.
True.
Like, he threw it, and everybody just started looking around.
Well, that's because they probably thought that, like, the satellites that filmed the Ohio games were, like, hit by it or something, and it was out of play. It's the only explanation
that's
I can
think of. That's a
good point.
Like the Cowboys Jumbotron.
Yeah, exactly. So, again, you know, Chesapeake's turnovers lead to a loss here. What needs to change for the Bayhawks going forward?
Essentially, like, other than, you know, roster stability, figuring out who's going to be there and, you know, can they get guys consistently in? I mean, just the turnovers. The turnovers are super problematic for them. If you had to pin it on one thing, why they lost this game, I would say it's that turnover problem. Like, I started keeping track during the game. I've never done this in any game I've ever watched. I started recording the stat of how many times someone runs with the ball back into their own crease. Like, ooh. I'd never done it because I never thought that was a relevant statistic to keep. But they did it on multiple occasions in this game. And, like, you can't do that if you're trying to beat the Ohio Machine.
No, you can't make mistakes like that. And it's funny because Chesapeake has all this firepower. Lyle Thompson made his debut for them. The other thing that I counted were how many times that Thompson made a no-look behind the back or otherwise amazing pass to someone that was open, and the ball bounced right out of their stick because they weren't ready. And that was three. And those three goals would have won them the game. And they would have been goals if those players were ready. So I think there's an adjustment period to playing with Lyle. By the way, he turns the ball over a lot too, but you get the spectacular with the turnovers with him. So that's a wash for me. But yeah, I think just Chesapeake needs to, you know, work on getting their finishers into good positions and not, you know, like you said, making mistakes like running through the crease or, you know, taking shots without the ball being backed up. I mean, for me, that's a turnover. I know that's not an official statistic, but whenever I watch a game and there isn't a guy at X to back it up, it's a turnover for me. Moving on, game four. The least competitive game of the weekend, Charlotte 18, Florida 14. The Skynets got hacked. The Hounds surged and dominated basically the entire game. John Hawes, named to the All-Star team this week. He's a man. 5 goals, 3 assists. It's the best game he's ever had in the MLL. Tell me a little bit about his impact on this Hounds team.
You know, the funny thing is when we were doing our first team, second team, and third team all-pro list, I started, you know, trying to figure out who was going to be around there. And I said, yeah, you know, I guess John Hawes has been having a pretty good season. And then I checked the actual stats and was like, wait, he's got more points than anybody. At least he did at that time. I think this season he's kind of putting together, not to say he was bad previously, because he's been productive for a long time, but I think we're kind of seeing this season just kind of a progression where he takes the next step. And he's, maybe it's, you know, that the players around him are getting more used to one another. It's, you know, another year with Ryan Brown. You know, Kevin Crowley's been involved this, you know, this entire time instead of showing up a little later. So I think maybe it's just a combination of factors like that. But he's really putting all sorts of elements of his game together this season and progressing nicely.
I think that he is the talisman of his team in that Charlotte, like Hawes, is underrated. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, no, I definitely agree with that. For some reason, and I mean, I don't even think it's like an agenda thing, some teams just get more limelight than other ones. I mean, it's not like Charlotte's been historically bad. I mean, they were in the playoffs last year. You know, they had a chance to go to the championship. But for whatever reason, you know, I kind of put my finger on it. They just, and it's weird to say this since we are talking about them right now, but I guess they don't get talked about as much as some of the other teams. So,
underrated. I absolutely underrate them, and I think that I will need to stop doing that because they're putting up some good performances against good teams. Our last game of the weekend, controversial, if not just strange to watch due to field lining issues, Atlanta 14, Rochester 13, in overtime, Randy, the stat man, winning it, beating a triple, scoring with one hand for the Blaze. after Rochester tied it up twice, including one to send it to overtime, and then Zed Williams ran out of bounds where they kept the balls for restarts. Not a lot of explanation there. It's another bad loss for Rochester. Adding this in with their loss to New York, their one goal loss last week, where do they go from here? Like, what do the Rattlers do?
You know, it's really tough because, I mean, they keep playing these one goal games. So, you know, when the game is over, I'm sure they're asking themselves, you know, oh, did it really just come down to, you know, one little play, one play here, you know, one turnover here, one turnover there. And in that case, you know, how big of a you know, roster shift or something like that do you really think you should do? If you feel like you're close enough, then I guess maybe you just try to ride things out. You know, especially at this point, trade deadline come and gone. I think, you know, the people that they have on the roster are going to be the people they can go with. And the sentiment is hopefully that once they stay playing for a little bit longer, you know, like I saw Williams and McIntosh have some good two-man game stuff. You know, maybe they can be more productive next game like that, and they can get some more points that way. So, I mean, I'm assuming even though it didn't work out well for them, I don't think they're going to really change that much, and they're just going to ride or die with what they have.
So, you know, going into this game, I kind of saw it as a desperation situation for both teams. And on the other side of the ball, do you think that this is an anomaly win for Atlanta? Because they really did win as a result of Rochester's many mistakes and complete and total, you know, poor management of the game at the end of the game. Or is this kind of the start of Atlanta's run? Like, did they just take what was given, or, you know, is it a sign of something greater?
So I'm going to say kind of yes, because I think being able to take what's given is a sign that you've got like a quality team. You know what I mean? Like, if somebody leaves something on the table and you can take it, then, you know, I think that's a really good sign. So you said, they had Rochester had a turnover that gave Atlanta the ball in overtime anyway. You know, I mean, Rochester could have scored and we wouldn't have had any of this discussion. But I could say that there might be a start going here with Atlanta, just because this is the first time, like the last game, that's the first time they had their actual like goal lineup in place. You know what I mean? Like Matthews, Rice, and Stotts are all back. And, you know, the guys who were there, you know, like Bocklet's been playing great. And, you know, Tom Moore's been doing well going in. But, you know, that's their core, Matthews, Rice, and Stotts. And then Gettleman is back now. You know, he just had the 2 weeks where he was out. And so, you know, now that they've finally got everybody together at like the ideal situation, I think maybe they could kind of start to go on a run. We'll see.
All right. That's going to do it for our weekend update. We're going to move on to news and notes. This is a huge segment this week. We got two big ones and two little ones. We're going to start with a big one. Chris, what's wrong with the All-Star rosters?
Well, so here's the thing. I think there's a couple players that I would have liked to see. You know, we went over our votes last week. There are some guys that I would have liked to see who were not on the team. Now, usually if people kind of come at you with like, you know, oh, this guy got snubbed, my answer is, well, tell me who to take off the list. And then, you know, usually don't get a response to that. So, I mean, if we could just add as many people as we wanted, I wanted to see Chaz Woodson or Matt Gibson. And the reason for that is, since it is an all-star game, I want to see someone who is supremely entertaining on the field.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I mean, it's an exhibition. And, like, who scores like Matt Gibson scores? Who scores like Chaz Woodson scores? So I was hoping one of those guys would make it. Another thing I noted, D. Mitty's still getting no love, essentially. You know, the guys who are there who played D. Mitty are not really D. Mitty's anymore, you know what I mean? Like Jake Bernhardt or Matt Abbott. So I thought one of those guys would make it up there, like Dominic Alexander or something like that. So those were the things that kind of jumped off to me. Did you see anything that set wrong with you?
I mean, the goalies. It doesn't make any sense. I'm just It just doesn't make any sense, man. I don't get it. I don't want to like single people out, but I'm gonna. Tyler Fiorito and Brian Phipps have not had all-star seasons by any measure. Individual performances where they have helped their team win games, yes, 100%. But nowhere near as impactful as Austin Kout or John Galloway. We actually found out why John Galloway's not going to do it. He's getting ready for USA, and he's kind of has a lot of coaching responsibilities. But I don't know. I mean, also, the bright side of that is that you don't want to be a goalie in an all-star game. It's like people trying to humiliate you all day. It's like go to a family reunion. It's awful. Like, why would you do that? It does not sound like fun. Does not sound like fun at all. I thought we would see more ball-carrying defensemen. It seems like we've got a lot of big trees here, laying some serious wood. Not a lot of guys that are super exciting. Luckily, we are going to talk to one later in Scott Ratliff from Atlanta. But I don't see a ton of skilled long poles here, like in terms of like transition and offense play. Michael Earhart needs to be on this list and is not. Even though I just said that, Tucker Durkin not being on the list is bad because you should have corrected the mistake that I made, in my opinion. I don't know. A lot of these make sense but don't, and I think that a lot of them are dependent on Team USA tryouts. You know, I think there's a lot of that going on here. I think that this roster in terms of attack and midfield, it's going to be super exciting to watch, if I'm going to say anything positive. And I think that is the most positive thing you can say. This is a super talented group of guys that can score from anywhere on the field. You got long range bombers, you got playmakers, you got inside finishers, tricksters, raw power. Everybody's here. The gang's all here. And I think it's going to be a very exciting exhibition for everybody that goes to Sactown to see this one. Any other final thoughts on the All-Star rosters?
I will say this. I did find this out. Austin Kout was not available for the All-Star game. So he's not a snub.
Why? Do you know why? Can you say why?
I don't know. I just checked with him and he told him he wasn't going to be available that weekend.
That's tough.
But I don't know why.
That does happen a lot, though. And for people that are kind of getting into the league a little deeper, that does happen from time to time. And I think the Team USA stuff didn't have as much as an effect on here as maybe some people are talking about. But I think it was definitely, you know, a player. And I think you're going to see some players that are going to the Team USA tryouts maybe take it a little easy in this game. And that's unfortunate because that's kind of when players get hurt. So hopefully that doesn't happen. But yeah, that's pretty much all we have to say with the All-Star rosters. Adam Gittleman added to the roster today, by the way. Let's move on to two little items here. The Twitter game of the week was the Ohio game, the second Ohio game against Chesapeake, filmed at the Fortress. And you know what? The Fortress is not getting the sound effect this week because we've complained about the cameras, and it was kind of funny for like one or two games. And the fact that we got to the Twitter game and you have people in the Twitter stream complaining that you can't see the game or the ball or the player numbers, that's like a wake-up call. And they by the way, they did zoom in a little bit in the second half. I did notice that. There was a change that was made, but it's not enough. And the resolution went down when they did that. So you built this great stadium, and you didn't know where to put the cameras. That is an untenable situation going forward. That needs to be fixed tomorrow. And if that means you lose a couple seats because you have to move the cameras, too bad. Too bad. I don't care. You did not sell out that stadium. Move some people around. Little things like this really bother me because, especially on the Twitter game of the week, you have fans tuning in to MLO games for the first time in their life. This is your chance. This is your time. This is your shot. What if you had one moment? This is an Eminem song happening in real time for the MLL, and they are screwing it up. They are throwing up mom's spaghetti, and it needs to be fixed permanently. What are your thoughts?
I agree completely. If they have any future Twitter of the game, Twitter of the week games, the league might want to consider flexing them out of that spot, maybe sending the crew somewhere else if they have that kind of, you know, flexibility in their schedule. Because, I mean, you know, if you're watching the game and you can't tell who's who, essentially. You know what I mean? I don't think this is an overreacting sort of thing. I got to catch a replay on my Comcast channel the following day, and I literally couldn't tell who was who. I was trying to take notes of the game, and I just couldn't see. You know, it's not a problem we're used to having with sporting events. So, you know, I mean, hopefully they can fix it, and, you know, hopefully they fix it soon, and they put some plans in order to do so immediately.
Hey, man, it's 2017. Can't have that.
Yeah.
Another little item here. Casey Powell will have his launch jersey retired on the July 15th game. Really? Like, really? You play for the launch for 3 years? I get that you live there, man. And it's not your fault. This is the team. I'm not yelling at you, Casey. We boys. But why? Why? I said on Twitter, we have a Wade Boggs situation. And then I realized I was old because people only know Wade Boggs from the Always Sunny in Philadelphia episode where they try to drink 64 beers on a plane. It's the only place I know Wade Boggs from. Wade Boggs played for the Red Sox, and then he played for the very hated Yankees, and they let him retire as he rode around on a horse. And then after that, he went to play for the Diamondbacks for a year. The launch are the Diamondbacks. And I'll tell you what, Casey Powell going to the Hall of Fame for MLL, oh wait, there isn't one, but if there was, he would not be wearing a launch jersey, even though he won MVP in that thing. He would be wearing a Rochester jersey or a Lizards jersey or a Bayhawks jersey, because those are teams he won championships with, and that's what you do. You do not do it with your swan song, even if you win MVP. Thoughts?
First of all, I feel super old because when you said the Wade Boggs thing and people recognized him from somewhere else, I was going to be like, oh, yeah, from the Simpsons episode that he was on. But that Simpsons episode is probably like 25 years old or something like that. So the question would be, do you think the other teams are also going to retire his jerseys, or does everybody get one at this point?
I feel like he should go on a tour because he played for a lot of teams.
Yeah.
I feel like you just go on a retirement tour. I mean, he could have done that his last season if he announced that was his last season, because that's the new thing to do, right?
I think so.
Do the Kobe tour, you know, get all your jerseys retired. Anyway, I can't talk about Kobe. I'm not allowed to. I say bad things when I talk about Kobe. All right, we are moving on to the other big segment we have for you guys. Today was the MLL trade deadline. And usually these go by with maybe a couple crickets. So let's start with the little cricket trades. Kevin Cooper from Chesapeake going to Charlotte for a third rounder. Not much to say there. Could be a bit player. I don't think he's going to start. I think he's another swingman, attackman, midfielder.
Yeah.
You know, has skill, has ability, but is at his best around the goal mouth. And I think Charlotte's a little crowded in that area right now, so I don't know how much damage he's going to do, but a good upgrade for them. And Chesapeake, as we talked about before, a lot of personnel issues. The Canadians also add Cal Durth, who from Charlotte, who they should have drafted in the first place but decided not to for some unknown reason. And that trade kind of makes a little more sense when we get to the big trade. The third biggest trade, I think, is Tim Barber going to Florida for a third-round pick in the college draft, which is like, you know, Denver was openly shopping Barber and asking for a lot and seeing what they could get for him. And, you know, a third-round pick from Florida, it's a good price. I mean, he's had a couple good games for the Outlaws this year. Kind of bounces in and out of the lineup, though. I don't know what he's going to do for a Florida team insofar as, like, solidifying it. But he did score big goals last year for the Outlaws in their championship run. So maybe Florida's kind of looking for a little more experience to go with their rookies. You know what? I'm going to let you do the big trade. I don't even want to talk about it. I mean, I do, but like, I want you to introduce it.
Okay. So the big trade, if you haven't heard, Boston Cannons are sending Will Manny and Joe LoCascio up to New York, and the Lizards are giving up Dave Lawson and Chris LaPierre. Mr. Devitt, your thoughts on this trade?
What the f***? Like, that's going to get bleeped out, I hope. But, like, that was my first thought. That's my one. I'm using my one expletive per year on that because what are you thinking? Boston, what are you thinking? Well, man, he's a captain. Well, man, he's like your leading scorer. What are you doing? You're not even getting an attackman back. You're getting a midfield back, and your midfield is crowded. And you traded for another swingman in Cal Dearth. Is he going to play attack? He did play attack at BU, by the way, for part of his time there. What's Dave Lawson going to give you that other guys in your team don't already give you? What does Dave Lawson give you that, like, Seabald doesn't give you, or Perkovic, or Turi? I don't know. I don't get it. What does Chris LaPierre give you that Hawkins doesn't give you? What do these guys give you? You already have these guys on your roster. They just have different names. I don't understand it at all. My question for you, is this the beginning of Boston's process? Is Boston trusting the process here? Because they're at the bottom of the league and they're like, we kind of got to blow this up.
You know, they might be trusting the process. Here's what's surprising to me. If you're making this trade, why aren't you, and I don't know what's available and what isn't available, but why aren't you getting picks if you're like, you know, okay, that's bad. We got to make some moves here. I don't see how Boston does this and says, there, now we're better than we were yesterday.
There's no way.
Yeah.
There's no way.
It's very confusing. The numbers just, like you said, the positions and the numbers, it just, the balance doesn't make sense. And that's just like the on-field stuff. You know, Will Manny is, you know, as Boston as we have for that squad. He's, you know, he is their guy. And
he went to UMass, Chris.
Yeah.
I don't care if he's from Long Island. He went to UMass. You know how many UMass guys there are in the league? Friggin' one. Will Manny.
It doesn't make a ton of sense to me. And, I mean, I need explanations from both teams. I don't know where Boston is going to best utilize Dave Lawson in the current situation they have.
Nope.
And like, is he second line or is he bumping somebody off of the first?
If you trade Will Manny for him, he better be starting. I'll tell you that.
I guess they bumped Turi down. I mean, I feel like he was kind of productive when he was last out there.
I think that they're going to start either Beta or Kyle Jackson at attack, and maybe flex kind of Buchanan in and out of there. Because, you know, lest we forget, Kevin Buchanan was an attackman, you know, in college at Ohio State. So that's a guy that can fit in for them and has kind of played very limited minutes down there for them. And maybe they want to work him into the offense more. But the only way this makes sense is if they start running an invert. Because the other two attackmen that Boston have, Kyler Balestri and Davy Emelie, are off-ball guys, not really ball carriers. You know, Emelie is great. He can finish anything. But, you know, Balestri's a matchup dodger. He'll dodge against guys that he's, you know, much bigger than to get an advantage, to hit a little roll or to get to 5-on-5 a little easier. But by and large, he's more effective off the ball and moving into spots, just like Emelie is. So the question is, like, who's the initiator? Do they have, like, faith in putting Max Seabald at X to initiate for inverts? Is that going to be what Lawson does? Is that going to be what Perkovic does? Are you going to play Perkovic at attack so he can just fire balls and just clear out for him? I just don't see personnel-wise how this trade makes any sense for Boston. And you know, not to keep bringing up bad memories for Boston fans, and I am hard on Boston. I realize that. But in this instance, I mean, you've traded in the past, what, 3 years? You've traded Paul Rabil, the face of lacrosse at the time, and still is. You've traded Scott Ratliff, who is now easily the best LSM in the league. And now you've traded Will Manny, who was your captain and stuck with the team and was a great locker room guy and a leader. Like, if I'm a Boston fan, I'm mad. And I'm wondering why this happened, and I think Boston's going to have to give them an answer. Right?
Yeah, I would love to hear some sort of explanation. You know what strikes me as kind of – like I noticed it at the time, but in hindsight it seems super weird. So in Boston's last game, the fourth quarter when they called timeout, you know, to do their to go for their last play with like 30 seconds left, you know, when they started to play.
Yeah.
They gave it to Jackson coming out of that timeout. And I was like, oh, that's strange. I probably would have, you know, gone with somebody with a little more on his resume, you know, give it to Manny or somebody like that. But they gave it to Jackson. And, you know, I didn't think anything else about it. And then in overtime, they called timeout and they gave it to Jackson again. So for, you know, whatever, I guess, for whatever reason, you know, Jackson's playing well. Maybe they think he is the future of the team. I mean, getting rid of Will Manny still seems like a bit much. I'm just offering an explanation again. I'm not saying I would have done it, but I'm saying maybe that's why they thought it was a good idea. I mean, I don't know if I'm talking to New York either way, if I'm Boston.
Yeah, you should be.
You know, I'm not picking up the phone if Felina calls me.
Nah.
But I mean, I thought that was weird. Maybe they feel like, you know, it's been four games with Kyle Jackson, but maybe they are enamored with him so far.
Kyle Jackson's Canadian, right?
Is he? Uh-huh.
I believe he's Canadian. I'm going to need all my Canadian people to put on some earmuffs for a little bit. Okay? If you're listening to the podcast, you're Canadian, just earmuffs, okay? All the Canadians in the league this year are only playing to make worlds. And I don't like it. And I'm going to tell you why. Because you're not going to be here in 2 years. You're not here. You don't care about the MLL. Because if you did, you would have played it. I'm not talking about Kevin Crowley. Kevin Crowley cares. Kevin Crowley suits up every year. This is not fair. It's not fair to do this to MLL teams. Like, I'm not here to, like, push for an embargo of Canadian players, but, like, maybe teams should be a little more responsible. Do you know what I mean? Like, we're not only are now we're renting the Canadians, we're giving them the ball in key situations over guys that are trying to make Team USA and play hard and be great players and be great servants to your team. And in my eyes, that's a direct reflection of this trade. Like, we're seeing all these Canadian players, like, coming in, being rented. Curtis Dixon's one. Sean Evans is one. Guys that are coming in, playing big minutes, and then, like, you're going to bounce. You don't care. Someone in the summer ball is going to pay you more money. You're just going to leave. Like, to me, that's, like, upsetting. And maybe I'm a little too sensitive on that, but, like, it doesn't seem fair that you can just rent guys. And I don't like it. And I maybe it has nothing to do with this trade, but to me it did. Just by you telling the story of Jackson getting the ball in two game-winning situations. It makes no sense. Maybe they did it to, like, change it up. But, like, when you come out of a timeout with the ball, that guy isn't the guy that runs the play all the time. Because that's the guy who has the best defender on him. You try to match up for the rest, and you run on the other guys off of picks. And that's where your shot comes from. It doesn't come from the guy with the ball. In both situations, they had plenty of time. And they just didn't do it. They just did this strange tactic. I don't understand it. I don't like it. I don't like this trade. You know what? I don't even really like this trade for New York, because this just seems like you're adding another dude, another lefty dude, who is good off ball, great off ball, some would say, and is good on ball and wants the ball. But you already have guys like that. You already have guys like that. You already have Matt Gibson. In terms of lefties, you already have Joe Walters. Like, you already have JoJo Marasco. Like, what? Why do you need four lefties playing at the same time? For funsies? Like, how are you going to spread that out? If you run 3-3, I get it. You're going to play twos, and you're going to have a lot of fun, as long as guys can dodge, and the guys that can't dodge will just be off, and that means Gibson will be off, and Manny will be in. But if you're not running a pairs offense, like, I don't know what else you're doing or how else you're utilizing him in the correct manner. For New York, it doesn't make a lot of sense either. And that's the thing that is also like, this is New York making a trade for New York to make a trade, because New York's offense looks like crap, and we're just going to throw more talent at it. Right?
Yeah. It's like, okay, so you pulled off a trade and you got, well, Manny, cool. What are you going to do with him now? I don't know where he goes in this offense. Like, because if the only way Will Manny's going to thrive in the Boston offense means benching Matt Gibson, I don't know if your net gain is all that significant, you know?
I don't think it makes any sense.
Like, what game here to get, you know, benches? Yeah, I mean, you know, if Dixon's in there, it seems like Palasek has been taken out of the rotation. And if Gibson's being taken out of the rotation as well at this point, I don't see it raising the team's total, you know, that much.
Kyle Jackson is Canadian, so this segment is going to stay in. We don't have to cut it, which will be good. I don't know, man. I would be really upset if I'm a Cannons fan. I've had some very pointed interactions with Cannon staff this year. I don't know what it comes down to. Maybe they just don't like how I'm covering them. Whatever, it's fine. As you know, people know that are listening to the podcast, they're basically my local team. But I don't really go down to see games because it's really just kind of taxing and hard to get in and out for me. And you know, I live in New Hampshire. I got to drive an hour and a half down and park a mile away to go to a Winnebago of death bolted onto a stadium that, you know, was around for Roosevelt's New Deal. I don't know. It doesn't seem like fun. But they make their decisions, man. They do what they want to do. They don't really care what anyone thinks, clearly, if they're making this trade. And it's not like Will seems to have forced his way out, right? Like, we see his tweets on Twitter. I spoke to him privately. He was surprised. And that makes it, to me, worse. So that's enough about that, though. A little too negative here. We're gonna flip this around. We're gonna talk to Atlanta Blaze long stick midfielder Scott Ratliff right now. We'd like to welcome onto the podcast now number two on the Atlanta Blaze, LSM extraordinaire Scott Ratliff. Scott, how's it going, man?
It's going well. How you guys doing?
Doing good. Doing the podcast thing. MLO trade deadline special. Pretty excited to get you on here. We'll start with last week's game. We kind of recapped that earlier for everybody, but you know, explain this new playing the settled offense thing that happened several times, including at the end of the game. Whose idea was it? Any concern about pacing yourself? Just how did it all come about?
So that was Coach Huntley's idea. I talked to him in the middle of the week, and he let me know that him and Jamie Monroe were talking about it, and they were worried about how many transition opportunities we were giving up on the other end. So for me, in terms of pacing myself, it actually was easier for me. People don't realize when you run to the box and back every time, it's another 50 or 100 yard sprint that you're doing. So to be able to just kind of hang out up top and get some rest while those guys were playing offense, it in some ways was almost easier on my legs and my lungs.
Now, this one's a Twitter question from Easton Bates. Easton, thanks for the question. Did the Team USA tryouts have an effect on guys wanting to play in the All-Star game this year?
I think it did a little bit. I think you've seen maybe one or two guys that did decide to take the weekend off for whether it be work obligations or just to rest up for the Team USA tryout. But I think when you look at the All-Star roster, you know, a lot of the guys going there will be in Baltimore over the next couple of days. And you know, I know I personally think it could be a positive to get to kind of go out there, play together, play against each other, kind of get us into a rhythm going into the tryout weekend.
So before the season, you took a trip to Japan with your sponsor, String King. What was the best moment of that experience for you guys?
Oh man, that's hard to say. The whole thing was, it was an unbelievable experience. You know, we coached, probably over 15 or 20 different universities and you know, I can't put my finger on just one, but the experience of coaching the kids there and seeing the discipline and how easily they were to coach and how excited they were about the sport. It was really awesome. So, I mean, I loved, you know, every moment of the on the field stuff.
What can you tell us about the head you're demoing for them, or can you?
Well, so for String King,
yeah.
You know, right now I'm using the Mark II V, and I've kind of bounced around. You know, I really the stick I'm using right now with I use the middle weight of their long pole, the middle two, and the 2V and the Type 3S mesh, and it's my favorite stick I've ever had. I mean, the balance and the weight of it is perfect. The V head, I think, is kind of what I've settled in with and is what's right for me. It's good ground ball, and it's not too pinched, you know, but it's not wide and heavy like a lot of the D heads on the market. So I love that stick. It's been good to me, and I love what those guys are doing over there, and I'm really happy to be a part of that crew.
Now, you played in the 4th of July game back in 2015 when you were with the Cannons, and this year you're doing it again with the Blaze. Is there any sort of adjustment you think you have to make playing on a game of that scale? You're going to give the rookies going into the game, you know, they have that massive crowd and everything like that. Anything different
about
that one?
Well, you know, actually it'll be my third time. I did it twice with the Cannons, and, you know, no advice. I mean, you're going to go out there and play the same way. You know, I think regardless of if there's a lot of people there, if there's nobody there, but you know, I definitely just will make sure they understand how cool of an opportunity it is, and you know, it's a big game. Even if it's just a regular season game, you know, you're playing in kind of an event in front of a lot of people, and it's a great showcase for our sport. So I'm fired up to be in it again. I think, you know, I've told people I think it's, you know, maybe the best atmosphere in lacrosse, and having a chance to participate in a Final Four. You know, I don't even know if that crowd can really touch what this 4th of July crowd is usually like. They do a great job of packing everybody down low, and the fans in Denver, they know what's going on. You know, it's not a bunch of families there kind of just watching a little lacrosse without any loyalty to a team. I mean, those people there are all Outlaws fans, and they'll let you hear it. So it's a really cool environment to play in, and pumped to be able to do it again.
So in the NLL, you saw the Swarm bring in Ludacris for the championship. Who do you need to get for a Blaze game from the ATL?
I'm on the 2 Chainz album right now. I think 2 Chainz is the real deal. The guys that, you know, a lot of people don't know, he went to the same high school as Cam Newton. He graduated, he played college hoops, graduated in 3 years. And on top of personally being a hip hop guy and a fan of his music, he's like a marketing genius, and what he's doing in the community in Atlanta, it's pretty cool to see. So for me, as far as Atlanta rap goes, he's kind of the guy right now. So I think if we can, you know, if we can make a run at it and get him in there, that'd be awesome. Does he listen? Does he listen to the pod? Do you know?
We'll try and get him on.
Sure,
we'll tag him on Twitter.
Okay, I would assume he does too. So hopefully he hears this and we can get him over there.
In your opinion, who is the greatest movie superhero?
Oh, man. See, my dad always grew up really pushing Superman on me, but I like Iron Man. You know, I like his combo of smarts and you know, his attitude persona on top of the Iron Man persona. So as far as the modern day superheroes go with these new Avengers movies, which are based out of Atlanta, I'm going to go with Iron Man, Robert Downey Jr. Great actor.
Underrated, some might say. So we already talked about your stick a little bit. Do you string it or do you have a guy?
No, I got a guy, Trevor. Trevor out at String King does a great job. He strings them up for me, sends them down ready to go. So, you know, that's something that I always wish I learned how to do. But truthfully, just in the era that I came up playing lacrosse in Atlanta, there wasn't really that culture hadn't made it, and it's very much there now, but hadn't made it down. You know, a lot of kids on my team didn't know how to string sticks. We would buy the factory strung, loosen up the bottom string, give it a little bag, and let it rock. So I pretty much used that until I showed up at Loyola and met some kids from the Northeast that taught me a little better.
Getting back to music for a second, what is the last song you listened to?
The last song that I listened to? I've been listening to what's this song by Calvin Harris with Katy Perry and Pharrell, Feels. That's been one that I've been vibing to the last couple of days.
All right, and we close it out with the best question ever. What is your order at Chipotle / favorite burrito place?
Chipotle is the favorite burrito place. It's really like, you know, I'm not a big like burrito guy. I don't like beans and a lot of things that like generally come in burritos. So I'm kind of picky, but I do eat a lot of Chipotle. I get white rice, steak, sometimes some fajitas, depends on how I'm feeling that day. And then I'll go mild salsa, corn, cheese, maybe get a little chips and guac on the side, something like that.
I'm glad to
see
guac.
And when I say something like that, I mean that exactly. That's what I get every time.
Exactly that. Yes.
Yeah.
Well, anybody that orders guac is obviously cool in my book. I actually had Chipotle today as well, and we don't need to go over my order because it's weird as hell. But hey, Scott Radliff.
I actually had Chipotle today too with Liam Banks, and I got to say this because I didn't say it to him today, but he's one of these guys that says Chipotle. You know those guys that don't realize there's an L and they say Chipotle. Have you ever heard that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Drives me nuts. So hopefully he hears this also and we can get that right.
I will tag him as well when we tweet this out.
There you go.
It's perfect. Just gonna thank be you. A wild interview, man. Everybody's gonna listen to it. It's gonna be a lot of fun. Scott Radliff, thanks a lot for joining us. Atlanta is gonna take part in basically, you know, a doubleheader coming up. You know, you have Florida on the 1st, and as we mentioned before, playing in Denver on the 4th of July game. Good luck in both those contests.
Awesome. Yeah, I appreciate it. Thanks for having me, guys.
Chris, what is up with all the lacrosse dudes picking Iron Man? Is that weird? Why is no one picking Batman?
Yeah, I didn't realize Iron Man is just kind of, you know, I think it's Robert Downey Jr. just killing that part.
She's just slaying the game. 100%.
Yeah.
100%. All right. It's time for everyone's favorite segment, Chris Explains Music. Chris, very important question for you this week. What is the best album of the last 12 months, and why is it Run the Jewels 3?
That's a very good question. You know, first of all, I'm glad that Chance the Rapper put out Coloring Book in May 2016.
Yep.
So I don't have to debate whether or not Coloring Book beats RTJ3. Run the Jewels 3 is the best album of the past 12 months because Run the Jewels is like if PCP got a record deal.
Yeah.
And what I mean by that is you put on some RTJ and you just go blank and acquire the strength of 10 men.
I would recommend not listening to this album while you're driving. I put it on as I drove to my men's league game on Thursday night, and I cannot believe I did not get pulled over. Because Don't Get Captured came on, and I was driving like I was in a NASCAR race. And I don't know what happened. I got to the game before anybody else. It's just a blank field. It was wild. This album is awesome. Chris is 100% right. It's definitely my favorite album in the last 12 months. Definitely check it out. And for all of you guys that have no idea what we're talking about, if you don't care about any of this music segment, do us a favor. Go watch the trailer, the teaser trailer for Black Panther. And the song in that trailer is a Run the Jewels song. And if you like that song in the trailer, and you like the trailer, and I don't know anybody that doesn't like the trailer, you'll go buy the album. Right?
Yeah, absolutely. And you don't even have to buy it. You should buy it. Go buy some merch or something like that to support them. But they do give their stuff away, too. So,
no.
I mean, don't really have any excuses.
Speaking of things that we're going to give away, Chris and I are going to give you guys our lax draft picks this week. We always do it early, and sometimes it puts us at a disadvantage. But, ladies and gentlemen, that was not the case for me this past week, where not only did I give my picks first, I won. Patrick McEwen blatantly copied me and also won. Mm-hmm. So I was happy with my lineup, and the guy featured in that lineup is my second pick. But first, we're going to go through pick by pick. In the first draft pick, you can pick an attacker or midfielder. You can choose from Peter Baum, midfielder for Ohio, Mac Gibson, attacking for New York, Marcus Holman, attacking for Ohio, Miles Jones, midfielder for Chesapeake, Paul Rabil, midfielder for New York, or Jordan Wolf, attacking for Rochester. Do you want to give your pick now, or are we going to wait?
I'll give my pick now. First pick for me, I'm going with Peter Baum. And the reason why I'm going with Peter Baum is because I think he's going to see a lot of advantageous matchups in this situation here. You know, can definitely take advantage, maybe do some inverts if he needs to, or just kind of run some short sticks down the alley. So I think it'll work out well for him.
It's a good choice. I went with another player from Ohio in this spot. I took Marcus Holman just because he's sneaky, man. He's just sneaky. He's the best attackman, but like he somehow gets free for easy dunks all game. He's just got amazing game IQ, gets open, and I think he's going to get open a lot against this New York defense. Second picks are long pulls. You can choose from Kyle Hartzell, defensive for New York, Jackson Place, defensive for Ohio, our boy, your boy, everyone's boy, Scott Ratliff, long safe midfielder for Ohio, or sorry, for Atlanta, or PT, a.k.a. Peter Ricci, LSM and defender for Florida. Obviously going with Ratliff. I'm just rolling with him. He might have let something slip about appreciating that I pick him every week, so I'm going to keep doing it.
Yeah, can't say I blame you. I am I'm hopping back on, and I'm picking Ratliff again. I've been going on and off, 1 week on, 1 week off. That was dumb. I got too cute last week. I went with another pick. Had I not done that, I would have won. I have learned from my mistakes, and I am back with Ratliff.
Smart man. Third draft pick, you can pick Drew Adams, goalie for New York, Kyle Burnlohr, goalie for Ohio, Adam Gittleman, goalie for Atlanta, or Austin Kaut, goalie for Florida. I think I know who you're picking here, and I think I'm going to pick him too. Austin Kaut, for me, is the choice, right? Even though he had kind of a tough game, he's still just so dynamic and so able to put up numbers that you can't not pick him, especially against guys like against Gittleman, who sees a ton of shots but also gives up a lot of goals against on his side. I think Burnlohr is a smart play here, but I don't know if this New York offense has, you know, maybe they're going to go supernova. Maybe they're going to go Super Saiyan in this game. I don't know. Maybe this is the game they come back. Drew Adams doesn't get a ton of saves. You know, that is great when he has the opportunity, but hasn't had a 20-save performance yet this season. I think you're going with Kaut as well, right?
Yeah, you know, I mean, I've been thinking on and off about it. I'm like, do I stick with Kaut? Because I was thinking Burnlohr, basically for the reasons you just said. I mean, he's a fantastic goalie. I think maybe I got a little shook from Kaut's performance against Charlotte. They brought Benny Peel in for a little bit, but I'm going to stick with Kaut. He's been good to me, so I will stay with him for this week as well.
Absolutely ready for a bounce-back game. Speaking of bounce-back games, we're going to close this out with the Twitter game of the week. And folks, it's a doubleheader because two games will be on Twitter this week. The first one is Atlanta at home versus the Florida Launch, July 1st, 7 p.m. Eastern. What's the first thing that comes to mind when you see this matchup?
All of the Syracuse Orange will be playing in this game. You're going to have Stotts and Rice, and you're going to have Salcido and Mariano, and now Tim Barber, and Stephen Brooks. It's just going to be a whole lot of orange. So right off the top of my head, that's the first thing I thought of when I heard that.
Chris might have thought of that, because Chris also went to Syracuse, folks. Just not trying to shade you. I'm just letting the folks know.
Right. You know, it happened.
He's pro-orange. He's pro-orange. I think for me, this game is definitely like, how does Florida stop this Atlanta attack? How do they stop Randy Stats in particular? I don't know who they put on him. I think Durkin makes sense, but I think they're going to use Durkin on Rice. So
I think so too.
Who else do you throw? Do you throw Gerard Newman on him because he's so big, because he has the size? Or is it another guy on that Florida defense?
I mean, it's going to be tough. Like, I agree with you. I think they're going to go Durkin on Rice, because I think the way people want to play Rice is not that there's so much an answer to stop him, but I think they feel like the answer to stop him is to just try to bully him.
Yeah.
And so I think Durkin is going to be the guy they enlist for that. I don't know. They might try something different with Stotts. He's another one who's very difficult to cover. Alec Tullett had some success against him last time they played. You know, relative success, because I mean, Stotts has kind of been killing it this whole time. But, you know, they might go back to that matchup for a little bit as well.
Yeah, it's a super interesting game, especially given where these two teams are in the standings. And, you know, like we said at the top, Atlanta kind of battling to get back into it. At 3-5, they're not out. I mean, you're basically only out once you lose your seventh game. And then the best you can hope for is 500. And all the teams, there's so many teams with five losses right now that it's almost like untenable to think that once you hit set like six, you have a chance. There are one, two, three, four, five teams with five losses right now. Five. That's crazy. That's in many ways, that's like worse than last year, but also better,
right?
You know, because, you know, we had that log jam, and this season is definitely going to end like last year, where there's going to be a lot of tiebreakers. So I think we're going to see a lot of teams pour it on in blowouts. And we haven't seen a ton of blowouts this year, but I feel like if this game gets out of hand, this could be, you know, a candidate for the first real true blowout of the season by like 8-10 goals or more. I don't know who it's going to be for, though. You know, that's the thing. Is Atlanta here? I mean, Atlanta hasn't scored 20 goals yet. I don't even think they've scored more than 15 in a game, except for that one performance against the Hounds, right?
Yeah, I think so. I think the Charlotte Hounds game was the only one.
Yeah, it's the only one where they really showed out and balled out. I think it's an opportunity for them. Obviously, the ball runs through their attack. So if Florida can make the right adjustments there, and if Florida's attack, you know, led by Dylan Malloy, who is killing it. I mean, a lot of people aren't talking about this. He was not good in the first half of his first MLO game. He had like three turnovers, like dodged into a circle and lost the ball three times. It was bad. And then in the second half, he had three goals. So, you know, this is a guy that's learning on the fly. He's able to create. He's physical, but he's also quick, and he plays with his head up, hits the open man. He's definitely one of the most dangerous members of this entire rookie class, and this rookie class has a ton of great guys, and most of them are on Florida. So I feel like this is, you know, not the trap game for Atlanta, because that's the next game we're going to talk about, but, you know, if Atlanta shows well in this game, I think it's going to go a long way for their season, but ultimately I think we're moving on to their next game, which is the second Twitter game of the week, Denver versus Atlanta, also known as the MLL sponsorship game, because the attendance for this game is more than any other game in the MLL all season. It boosts the entire attendance numbers. And this year, MLL needs that boost because these attendance numbers are woeful. They do not look good. And I hope that trend breaks. I did predict, I was talking with Joe Keegan earlier in the week, and I said, you know, I think that this 4th of July game is going to be the lowest attended one. And I don't have any sources for that. I just feel it because that's how the MLL attendance is trending. I hope I'm wrong, but, you know, this is a huge game for the league, not just these two teams, Denver and Atlanta. And I think Denver, after their comeback, they're back. I mean, they had a blip against Boston. They played like crap and they lost. And then they came all the way back against New York and they look good. They look real good. So I think, and Atlanta's defense is not good at sliding, and Denver will murder you if you can't slide. So any thoughts on Denver, Atlanta, the 4th of July game, the most important game of the MLL season?
Yeah. I mean, Denver just has so many weapons. You know what I mean? It's you can't have a weak spot on your defense or else it's going to get exploited. Now, I think the cool thing about this game, if Atlanta beats Florida, and that's, you know, I mean, that's a huge game,
very difficult Florida squad. But if they beat Florida, they're going to have a whole lot of just momentum heading in, you know, because, I mean, they came off of a big win of their own, you know, late comeback against Rochester and then overtime winner. So, you know, I mean, if you believe in momentum and if they can, you know, kind of double down and get past Florida, they're going to have, you know, they're going to be in good spirits heading to Denver. Denver's in the same situation. They just had a huge comeback. If any of that transfers onto on-field performance, you know, and hopefully it's going to be a really good game to see who can kind of get past the other one. I think, you know, Denver seems right off the top to be just dangerous at every spot. But, I mean, I would not count Atlanta out either. And, I mean, crazy things happen in these games. The game that I was talking to Ratliff about earlier, the 2015 game, Boston won 22-9. You know, yeah. So, I mean, you know, strange things have happened. And I don't know. I'm not going to rule Atlanta out, but they do have a challenge ahead of them.
100%. That is going to do it for our Week 11 MLL podcast. Thanks, everyone, for joining us. My name is Kyle Devitt. Again, you can find me on Twitter at TheKyleDevitt. Chris, where can people find you and your work this week on the internet?
Twitter at ChrisRosie22.
And Chris has the rundown up right now, and he will have a top 10 things in MLL that you should credit him if you use on air. Just saying.
Yeah, that'd be nice.
Just saying. It's not a stat. I get it. But, you know, he works hard. Reward him. Thanks a lot. Appreciate your listen. Check you guys later. X gon' give it to you. Wait for you to get it on your own. X gon' deliver to you. Knock, knock. Open up the door to spread. With the nonstop pop out from stainless steel. Go hard getting busy with it. But I got such a good heart that I make the mother.